From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made when a student at Wilson High School realized she wanted to become a police officer. Pursuing that goal was uncommon in a way, because that student, Tiffany Gatson, is an African-American woman. According to data from the Department of Justice, recent data from 2013, about 1 in 8 local police officers were female, including about 1 in 10 first-line supervisors. About 27% of local police officers were members of a racial or ethnic minority, compared to 15% in 1987. So when Tiffany Gatson graduated with a criminal justice degree from RIT, worked for the Monroe County Sheriff's Office, and then got a call from the Greece Police Department, she made history. On September 24th last year, Officer Gatson was sworn in as the first female African-American officer in the history of the Greece Police Department, and then had to go to the police academy. She graduated earlier this month, and she says being on the road was a dream goal, and now she's living it. This hour, Officer Gatson joins us to discuss her path to policing and the value of a diverse police force. Officer Gatson, an honor to have you. Congratulations. Welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And Chief Patrick Phelan from the Greece Police Department is here as well. Chief, welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Well, I want to start with you, Officer Gatson, because as I mentioned at the outset here, you know, you've had some conversations in the media. I know that this is a history-making hire for the Greece Police Department, but in some ways for you, you know, this is just the dream job you said you wanted since being in high school. When did you know? When did you know you wanted to be a police officer?
Well, like you said, in high school, I realized, okay, I always loved police work, and I always felt it was something in me that I always felt like, you know, I want to do this as a profession. And so I would say senior year, I was really serious about it. If you ask any of my friends and family and ask, what job did Tiffany want to do? She wants to be a police officer. That's all she talks about. So I, like you said, I went to college at RIT. And during my senior year, that's when I started taking the civil service test and just kept applying because I knew this is what I really wanted to do. I wanted a job where I'm helping people and just having a sense of pride with what I do waking up every day, because I feel anybody can have a job, but I wanted a career doing something every day that I actually love.
I asked this question not to date you, but to just try to understand the context of recent events in recent years. What year did you graduate high school?
2011.
And so you're pursuing this, and then a lot of what we've seen in the last 5+ years from Ferguson forward happens. Did anything change your mind about going into this field?
No, I mean, I understand that community relations with the police is not at its best right now, and that's just being realistic, but I knew that if I got into this profession, I'm coming with a true heart, with good intentions, that I really want to help people. So despite the negativity that goes on, I knew why I wanted this profession. So I just try to stay grounded and just remind myself, okay, keep thinking about the reasons why you wanted this job and keep pushing forward.
What was it like for you to get the call from Greece?
I was shocked. At the time, I was working at Monroe County Jail downtown and kept trying, you know, doing civil service tests, and for Greece to finally reach out to me, I was happy, you know, going through the background process. I'm like, oh, God, please just let me get in. So when I got that call from my chief saying, congratulations, you made it, I literally cried tears of joy. And I called my mom first thing because I wanted to give her the good news, because not all the time do people have the opportunity to say that, you know, this was my goal, my passion for so long, and I actually accomplished that. So for me to say that, I felt like it was truly a blessing. And I hope that what I've done inspire others.
Do you have any friends, in particular friends of color, who are confused about your choice or don't like your choice of careers?
I wouldn't say my friends, because like the old saying goes, if you want to find out the type of person you are, look at who you surround yourself with. And I don't want to be around people that are negative. I'm not going to say that I didn't have family or friends that were concerned about the safety, because obviously I am going into a profession where safety is a big issue. So I get that a lot. But people have come up to me, not necessarily people that I know that are acquaintance with me, but they'll frown and say, why do you want to be a police officer? And part of me understand why they think that way, because of, you know, what the media portrays and what goes on. So I get it. But like I said before, I stayed headstrong and know this is what I want to do. And you have to take the good with the bad and just be strong-minded.
What is the actual dream? I mean, now you're part of the department, but what's the actual work that you love to do and want to do?
I love talking to people. believe it or not, like I'm sometimes very quiet, but when I get into a conversation with someone, I love talking, especially intellectual conversation. As time goes on in department, I know I got to get some years on first, but I think maybe investigative work. I love researching. Like I said before, I love talking to people. So maybe something in CID, maybe in the future.
Well, you got your boss here. What's the drudgery? What part would you like to avoid?
I don't want to get fired. No.
No, you're in the door now. I know he's glad you're here. Officer Tiffany Gadsden from the Grease Police Department is here. Chief Phelan, this is a history-making hire for your department, and I want to start by asking you why you decided to hire her.
Well, you know, it wasn't really that difficult a decision. I think if you meet Tiffany, it's very hard not to like her. She's a quality human being. Tiffany's a good person, and when I talk to people that want to be police officers, that's what I tell them, that we're looking for good people, because if you're a good human being, you're going to be a good cop. So we're looking for good people that have, you know, values and morals and ethics, and I think Tiffany fits the bill completely. You know, she's just a great person.
How difficult is it to find people of color, and in particular women of color, to do this work right now, Chief?
It's incredibly hard, and that's, you know, the only negativity I've seen is people, responding, what took so long? And I think if you're going to criticize police departments for their lack of hiring, you really got to understand the process and understand how we hire people, because that's part of the impediment. It's incredibly hard to hire minority candidates. It's very hard.
In terms of just not seeing them pursuing the career to begin with, Chief?
Yes, that's correct. In fact, I started about 5 years ago. I partnered with a professor from Roberts Wesleyan and the Justice Institute, and we started kind of researching this and trying to figure out what the real problem is and why we have so few minority officers. And the biggest problem is people aren't interested in doing the job. So the way we hire people is, the first step is, like Tiffany said, you take a civil service exam, right, which is given once every 2 years. And the most recent test that we had 1,165 people sign up and be okayed to take the test, 1,165. 945 of them were white. 67 of them were black. So that's where we're start. That's our starting point. You know, those are people that just signed up to take the test. So the numbers are incredibly low, and those were down from 2015. They're about to give another test next month, and we'll see what those numbers look like. But we don't have a lot of minority candidates applying to take the job.
What can you do to change that?
That's the challenge, right? We brought together a group at Wesleyan. We formed the Greater Rochester Diversity Initiative, and we brought people in from different professions and different backgrounds, and we had a discussion about how do we turn this around. And really what it boils down to is you have to inspire people to want to be a police officer. And in today's climate, that's not easy to do. I don't think I have the answer right now exactly as to how you inspire people to want to be a police officer. One thing that I think we can do is, if we hire more minorities will want to work with us, right? Because if I'm not stupid. If you look at my police department, you see that there's 100 cops and there's 97 of them are white. It might be an impediment to getting somebody interested in working for your police department if they're a minority, right? I mean,
that's the current breakdown of the numbers, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So now that's a lot of pressure on an officer like Officer Gadsden to not only do her job, but also sort of be an inspiration to the community. But I guess that right now is the reality, that what you're hoping, it sounds to me, is that one hire, two hires, three hires begets more hires, more people interested, yes?
That's part of it, yeah. The other thing we have to do is look at what other ways do we have to inspire people to want to do this? Because the numbers are down across the board for minority candidates and non-minority candidates. So less people want to be police officers, which I don't think any of us think is surprising. In 2019, you know, it's a hard sell to ask somebody to want to be a police officer. So, you know, that's a challenge, and I don't think anybody really has an answer. If you find somebody who has an answer, then I want to talk to them.
Is there a recruiting aspect? Can you start young? Can you do outreach? I mean, and I know you do. I know you talk to schools. You talk to community groups all the time. But is there a recruiting aspect to this?
There's certainly a recruiting aspect, but it's challenging. The process of hiring police officers makes it challenging. Like I said, they give a civil service test every 2 years. So you really got to really want to be a police officer and stick with it. Take a test or wait 2 years to take a test. And you really got to be committed to the process. I was talking to a young man 2 years ago at a recruiting event. It was a young Hispanic gentleman. And I gave a talk at this event, and he came up to me afterwards, and he was excited. He said, "Chief, I really was inspired by what you said, and I'd love to work for the Greece Police Department." I said, "Okay, are you on the current list?" He said, "No." I said, "Okay, well, we're giving a test again in 2 years." And, you know, the air kind of went out of him. I could see it. You know, I'm like, there's nothing I can do about that. You know, it's not my process. It's a process governed by the state of New York, and I can't do anything about it.
So, should that process change, Chief?
My personal opinion, yes. Yeah, I think the process puts a lot of roadblocks in front of us. You know, when I want to hire a police officer, I call civil service and I tell them, send me a list of eligible candidates. So they send me a list, and that list are the only human beings on the planet Earth that I can hire. I'm stuck with that list, and I have to start in order of their score from highest to lowest. So if it's a list with 30 names, but 10 of them got 95s on the test, I can hire those 10 people, and that's it. So I think the process puts up roadblocks in front of us. That's my personal opinion. I think there's ways to make it better. And that's really, if people want to have the conversation about diversified police departments, that's a big part of the conversation, if we're going to have an honest conversation about changing things.
Officer Gatson, why do you think we have seen a decrease in interest and in pursuit of this career, in particular among the African-American population?
I can be completely honest about that. Again, like I said earlier, with what we see where people on the media, where it's portrayed with police brutality, you do have a lot of, what should I say, disgruntled people, especially in the Black community, or I'll just say minority community altogether, where they feel, why would I want to be a part of something that's tearing us down? And again, these are the words that you hear sometimes when you ask the question, well, why would you not want to be a police officer? Well, you know, they're pulling us over, we're getting shot, they're doing this to us. And so when you have that negative view of something, you're not going to want to be a part of it. And you know, it's sad. I understand the frustration from what you see on the media. And again, sometimes people will put on there, they'll place what they want you to see in order to get a certain reaction from you. I wish, you know, they could see the training and everything that's impacted with, you know, policing, so they can really see, you know, how we're doing a job, and it's not being, you know, trying to use brutality and all these other, you know, nasty antics when interacting with people. But again, if you see a negative view of something, of course you're not going to want to be a part of that, you know. And I feel in order to change it, we have to have better community relations with the people in the community. And it's not something that's going to be done overnight. It's going to take a long time. I don't expect, you know, being the first African-American female with Greece to make, you know, just sunshine and rainbows and make everybody want to change their mind. But if I can be a start, if I can be a gateway to that, I'm happy about that. Even if someone's not even particularly interested in law enforcement, for me to not even know a person, but they read my article, they're listening to this, and if that inspires them, I'm happy with that.
Do you feel any extra pressure being and when we say the first, she is the first African-American woman right now and ever, Chief?
Yeah. Yes, ever. In the Greece Police Department.
In the Greece Police Department.
Yeah.
Do you feel extra pressure that comes with that?
Sometimes, yes. And again, being honest, I'm a straight shooter. You'll have people of the same race as me like, oh, you're going to look out for me, right, if you pull me over because, you know, we're both Black. And my thing is, I don't care what race somebody is, I'm going to treat everyone equally. I'm on an equal playing field because I wouldn't want somebody to treat me higher up or less than because of the skin that I'm in. You know, I'm professional. At the same time, I try to be relatable to people because you want to give that, you want to, you know, project a human, what should I say, a human vibe to people. No one wants to feel like they're talking to a robot. And yeah, I'm police officer Gatz, and be relatable to people, be humble, be respectful. But at the same time, I'm going to treat everyone the same way. I'm not going to treat you less or treat you greater than because we share a same commonality in race or skin tone.
Okay. And to make sure I understand something, to clarify, you know, you've several times in this conversation, you've raised the point that in particular, people of color in this country see in the media a portrayal of police-community relations as being a certain kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to understand if you feel that and look, let's just be as blunt as we all need to be. I mean, like, I'm not looking for sort of an easy answer here. But do you think the media has done a poor job or an inaccurate job of portraying police-community relations, of portraying individual incidents that have resulted in violence or death? Has the media done a disservice, or do you think the media is reporting on it accurately?
It's a mixture of both. I mean, if you're going to play a video, why not play it from start to finish? I understand you do have, you know, a certain time frame to show a video clip. You can't just dwell on something forever. But if you're going to talk about something, talk about it from start to finish. You know, don't just play the clip where it's going to get more ratings and people, oh, you know, if people look at this, look at how many ratings we'll get and how people will view the police. Play it from start to finish. And if that police officer is in the wrong, then that police officer is in the wrong. If you played a video clip from start to finish and you say, okay, that police officer was actually doing their job, okay, that's fine too. Whatever the outcome is, that's fine. But if you're going to address the situation, talk about it for its entirety, not just what's going to spark, you know, a rise in people.
Yeah, I take that point. And I think that there are times where a 20-second chunk of a video can seem shocking, can seem wrong, and absent full context, the hard thing to do in the social media age is to wait. Because I'm not saying every full piece of video, and I don't think the officer is saying every full piece of video is fully exonerating of behavior, but at the same time, absent context, I do think it's valuable to wait, but people don't want to wait right now. So I hear that from you, that admonition that when we can, seek out the full video. And then when there's wrongdoing, call it out.
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, I'm not trying to sit here and advocate that, oh, no police officer can do any wrong. I'm a realist. If you play the full clip and that police officer is not, you know, doing their due diligence and not doing what they've sworn to be, then absolutely, that should be put out there. They're not doing their job. Just the same, if that officer is doing their job, show that as well. Don't just show where they're using, you know, defensive tactics to get this person to comply. Show the part where they ask this person just using verbal to follow my commands. They're trying to talk to this person. Show that part as well. Don't just show, you know, the down and dirty part of the clip.
Do you have any recollection in your own past of having been treated differently, or at least your perception of being treated differently by police based on your race?
No, honestly, I might have got a traffic infraction here and there, but I never had any encounters with the police. 95% of that's because my mother would kill me. She does not like, you know, being a knucklehead and just getting into mischief. She's always helped me be on the right track, and I think that's a part of the reason why, you know, I never had a bad encounter with police officers. And that's not to say that, oh, if you're walking, you know, a good path in life, you won't have an encounter, because you can be the greatest person. You might just encounter somebody that's, you know, they're not good, to say the least. But I personally never had a bad encounter with a police officer, just being a civilian. I can't speak for others because, again, everybody has different interactions with people. But for me personally, no, I have not, and I'm thankful for that.
So do you think, generally speaking, for people of color who feel like generally in this country, not indicting any fellow officers or any individual department,
mm-hmm.
that police in this country treat people of color, in particular African-Americans, but people of color, differently than they treat white people? Is that too general a statement, or do you think that is fair?
That's a tough question. I mean, not to try to, what should I say, be evasive with answers, but I feel like with any profession, just like you have the good, you do have some rotten apples probably. And, you know, hopefully with, you know, as we keep revamping the background process, we can get people in who are going to treat people decent regardless of, you know, their race or whatever. I do believe that people may have encounters where they are treated less than because of their race. And again, that's just being realistic about it. You have people who are not treated fairly because of the skin they're in. And I think that's an ignorant way to be. I'm not going to treat somebody differently because they don't look the same as me. And, you know, and that's regardless whether it's black or white or whatever. But I do understand right now, most likely we're talking about black and white right now, so I'll stick to that. And it's sad because that's a topic that goes way beyond policing. That's a history that goes way back to why there's animosity between the two races. And I understand we're not talking about that right now, but when we talk about that subject, that's something where the rabbit hole goes deep. Policing is just a part of it.
And do you think your presence on the force is going to affect police-community relations?
I believe so. Again, I don't think it's going to, like, take it by storm and everything's going to be great. No, but if it inspires especially minority people to have a different outlook at the police, then I'm happy about that. You know, it's going to take time. I don't expect just because I got hired that everything's going to turn out well. No, we need to continue to hire more minorities, you know, not just in Greece Police, but other suburban police departments. We should look at that. And again, like my chief said, you have no control over the candidates that are sent to you. You have to go with what's on the list. And sorry if I'm going on a tangent right now. But as far as minorities, if you want to see a change, be a part of that change. Anybody can sit here and complain all day. Be a part of the change. I wanted to be a police officer, so in order to score well so I can be in that bracket where you're going to be forced to look at me, I went to workshops and I took the mock test. So that way, when the actual test came itself, I was prepared better for it.
And now I'm curious to know, you know, you mentioned to reporter Megan Finnerty at the Democrat and Chronicle that you can help the department, or you hope you can, diversify a little bit more here. And Chief Phelan mentioned the numbers. Roughly, I think, 97 out of 100 officers are white right now in a country in which there is a big disparity, but that's a bigger disparity than the average. I mean, I think it's something like 12.5% national police officers are officers of color. So is there something else that you can do that you think you can, or maybe that the department can do? What would you say is going to be effective at convincing people of color to start pursuing this career more often?
We do have a community relations department. I know besides me, we do have two other officers. Well, actually one is a sergeant, but two other officers, to generalize it, that are African-American. If we could go to events, maybe that'll inspire other people of color to want to sign up, because if you see somebody that looks like you, that's a part of the department, that might make you feel that, you know what, maybe I can do this as well. Because I do understand it may be intimidating where, okay, they're telling me to sign up, but predominantly it's a white agency. What are my chances of being in here? And people are going to think like that. I'm not going to pretend that I don't understand how they feel. But look at me. If I can get in, I'm only 5 feet. I'm not the tallest thing. But if I was headstrong and I kept pushing because this was my goal, you can do it too. I wasn't always told yes to write the first time around. And like my chief said, the civil service test only comes out every so often. But if you're really passionate about that goal, don't let anything or no one stop you. Keep pushing.
Chief, do you think the media covers police community relations fairly?
No, I don't. I mean, I think there's you know, the trend today is it's good to cover police in a bad light. That's kind of the narrative that's out there. So, you know, you couple incidents where there are legitimate acts of police misconduct, and then you take an incident where there was no police misconduct and you paint it in a bad light, and you kind of put that all together and you make it look like cops are racist and cops are bad. And I think that's kind of the narrative that's out there. And that's one of the challenges that we face. I think that's why you see less and less police people wanting to be police officers, regardless of the color of their skin. you know, like I said, it's a hard sell today in this climate.
I want to sort of address this subject with a little bit more specificity, and I want to try to do it carefully because I know it gets emotional. But even a left-leaning media outlet like Vox pointed out recently that it's important, it's probably valuable to keep in mind that the DOJ under Eric Holder, not the current DOJ, but under Eric Holder in the Obama administration, came to the conclusion that the officer in Ferguson did not commit acts of misconduct in the death of Michael Brown, that there was probably, based on the evidence, an altercation in which Michael Brown reached into the vehicle, tried to grab an officer's gun, that there was a tussle, that, and again, I'm only talking about one incident. I know it's sensitive. I'm not saying there are not other incidents, because the notion of hands up, don't shoot became more of a national rallying cry for a community that feels like even if they do put hands up and don't shoot, they could get shot. Walter Scott in South Charleston or North Charleston in South Carolina is a much better example of someone who's literally running away from a police officer, is unarmed, and ends up shot. But also you have a case where it took 5 years and you have the officer involved in the Eric Garner case dismissed from his job, and there is, you know, some of the police leadership comes out and condemns. The media condemns the leadership of the city, saying that you didn't have officers back. So I know how sensitive it is. And I understand, Chief, why you can be frustrated at times. But when people look at the Eric Garner case and they say, well, boy, we still don't have consensus on what's okay and what's not okay. I mean, you think that officer should have been fired?
You know, the Eric Garner cases, you bring up excellent points because, you know, you're correct. In Ferguson, Missouri, that officer was cleared by President Obama's and Eric Holder's Justice Department of any wrongdoing. Yet we still have a presidential candidate saying that Michael Brown was
multiple
murdered.
Multiple candidates,
was
yes.
murdered,
yeah.
Which is a lie. Michael Brown attacked that officer, and that officer now doesn't have a job because he was attacked on the street. You know, the incident in South Carolina was outrageous. That officer should go to prison, and he did. The Eric Garner case is tricky. You know, is clearly their police tactics were incredibly poor. They got a call for a man with a gun. They found the person that was supposedly the man with a gun, and they pulled right up next to him. Those tactics led to that shooting. If they had used proper police tactics, there may not have been a shooting. So, you know, that's a case that is tricky, and you know, I would rather be, if I was in the case of being the chief of police of those officers, I'd want to take a look at every aspect of that investigation and make my own decision as to whether or not they should be fired. I don't know all of the details, so I'd rather not comment on that specific case, but there was certainly some really poor police tactics. But that's what I'm saying. I mean, you take cases, the media takes cases where the police weren't wrong, and they paint them as if they were, and then you mix it together with a case where they were wrong. The case in Louisiana, where the police stopped the gentleman that was selling CDs outside the convenience store. I apologize, can't remember her name. Those cops were totally wrong. They were wrong. But then those incidents happen, and we say, well, that's what the police do, right? No, one or two cops did something bad, they should be dealt with. If they have to be arrested, they should be arrested. If they have to be fired, they should be fired. But that we can't look at an incident and say, the police do that. That's not fair.
I understand that point. I also hear people say, well, even when police do that, even if, as you say, it's not all cops and it's not every day and it's not every department, even when that happens, there's pushback at times to discipline, whether it's the Garner case, Philando Castile, the man who told an officer at a stop in Minneapolis, I believe, that he was licensed to have a gun, had it on him, and was shot 7 times and died. And there's still a debate. I mean, former Monroe County Sheriff Patrick O'Flynn said on this program he wasn't sure that officer did anything wrong. I don't understand that personally. And that's why I think communities of color say, how can we not agree on some of it? But what I'm hearing from you, Chief, is evaluate each incident on its own as opposed to rolling something into a national narrative. Is that
right? You're talking about thousands and thousands of cops all over the country, and we're treating them as if we're all one group. You know, I mean, I've never been I've been to like 10 states, you know, I don't know any cops in California. You know, it's, you can't paint us all with the same brush and say, this is what the police do. They just, you know, they just shoot you for no reason. That's not fair. And you do have to evaluate every case on its own merits. And sometimes the cops are wrong and sometimes the cops are right. And there's a lot of detail that goes into that. You know, if you have a case like that, you're talking about hundreds of hours of investigation they have to go into figuring out exactly what happened. It's not a matter of looking at a 10-second video clip. You need to spend hundreds of hours investigating every detail of that incident and then come to an intelligent conclusion. Was that cop wrong or was he right? But we make a decision based on 10 seconds of video. That's what we do in America.
Officer Gadsden, do you think that the movement that largely sprang up after Michael Brown, I mean, do you accept the DOJ report? Do you think that officer was given a bad rap in Ferguson?
Again, I tread lightly talking about that because, like the chief was saying, you don't know all of the details of a case. I don't work for that department. I don't know what all it entailed. If that officer was actually following protocol and doing their job, should he be slandered? No. But if there was ill intentions, mm-hmm. you were doing things that you didn't have to do for it to result in what it did, then do you deserve the backlash if you do something wrong? So I get both sides of it. I understand. I understand both sides. The frustration when you look at a clip and you feel like, okay, police brutality, and it seemed like they're attacking our black men in America. You often hear that in minority communities. They're attacking our black men. I'm scared for my child to go out, you know, because I'm feared they might get shot.
Well, what would you say if you heard that in the sort of, quote unquote, the black community today? If mm-hmm. you heard that now as an officer in Greece, what would you say?
If I was sitting down talking to an individual having this discussion, which I don't mind because I like having deep talks, I understand the frustration. I understand you fearing. I wish you I wish particular events didn't cover the mask that all police officers are like that. But I understand it's hard not to not transition to that mind frame when you see so many events where you're like, okay, I get what you're saying, but I keep seeing this over and over again. How could I not think like that? And obviously, it's impossible to sit down with every person and try to remold their mind frame. Besides talking to people, they also have to take it upon themselves to do the research and see what all a case entails besides just a 10-second clip. You know, but I do understand the frustration. I hope our police and community relations change because it is sad when you pull somebody over and sometimes you can just see the fear in their eyes because they wonder, okay, this traffic stop, what is it going to lead to? I've personally witnessed you can see the fear in someone's eyes when you stop them. And it's kind of heartbreaking because I know that when I signed up for this, I'm not perfect, but I have a good heart. I know that I want to do right by people. You know, I wouldn't sign up for this job if I didn't care about others. So to know that those few events make people have a different outlook on policing, it's tough to deal with, but it's something that, you know, I still want to do at the end of the day and help.
What happens in your work that makes you feel like you know you've chosen the right profession?
Moments like these. I would have never thought that I can sit here at a radio station, a popular one at that, where a lot of people can hear my voice and hear that, okay, even though she's a police officer, she still understands people in a community. Even though she's showing both sides, okay, I understand where the police are coming from, and also understand your frustration too. You know, I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat and act like I don't understand why people are upset about the issues that are occurring, because I do. And hopefully they can see that, okay, there is officers that understand how we feel, and those officers want to make an effort to better the community relations so that negative outlook can change, hopefully.
Are you an optimist?
At times, yes.
Chief, are you?
I am. Yeah, I really am. If I wasn't, I wouldn't be here. I've got 30 years in the job. I could retire and get paid to do nothing, but I believe that I can make a difference. I believe that we can affect change. It's not going to happen fast, but when I think when I retire 10 or 15 years from now, our police department's going to look a lot different. And I'm a firm believer that the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. I believe it in everything that I do. And so I never back down from a challenge. I think about that. I think I'm going to take that first step. And I'm going to keep going forward. And as long as I'm moving forward, I'm going to be okay.
You're hearing Grease Police Chief Patrick Phelan alongside Officer Tiffany Gatson, who is the first ever African-American woman hired to be an officer in the Grease Police Department. And after our only break of the hour, we're going to find out if Officer Gatson thinks that eventually, 10, 15 years, 25 years, she could be a police chief. We'll talk about that, what it might mean in the community, and get some listener feedback as well next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the Trump administration is making some changes to the Endangered Species Act. We're going to talk about why critics say the changes will endanger more species. The Trump administration says that's not true. These changes are several years in the making. They are transparent, and they will improve protections for species while allowing for American growth and progress. The critics say it's another story. You will hear it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson with Officer Tiffany Gatson from the Grease Police Department, the first ever African-American woman just starting out in her career now. And I'm curious to know how you feel about officers living in the communities that they serve, because that's sort of a debate in this community. You know, should you live within the bounds of the geographical area that you're serving? How do you feel about that?
It can be tough because, again, what if you, I know people think, well, what if you arrest someone and you happen to run into them, and when you arrested them, you know, it wasn't good. They were threatening you, or, you know, they may not have been threatening you, but you arrested someone that's a high risk, you know, because we do have some people that are officer risk out here where you have to really, you should be on your P's and Q's anytime you encounter someone, but you do have some defendants who are a very high risk factor. Your life could be on the line when you interact with them. So to know that, gee, I arrested this person, I live in this town, you know, people don't stay in prison forever. Eventually, they'll come back home. What if you run into them? What if you're out with your family and somebody, you know, approaches you about a situation or encounter you had with them? Those are thoughts that run through your mind. So again, it goes back to how you treat people. And I understand sometimes you can treat someone with the utmost respect and a situation can still just take a turn for the worse if that person just doesn't, you know, doesn't want to connect with you. So it can be challenging. But again, I feel like policing where you live, it'll probably, not to sound cheesy, but make it feel more heartfelt towards you. Sure. You know, like, yeah, I'm making a difference in a community where I live. And some officers may choose not to live in Grease, you know, but I feel that's all personal for each individual if they choose to remain in a community where they police or if they want to live elsewhere. It all has to do with how much safety you feel and also for your family. So it's a lot of factors that you have to take into account.
And Rochester has this debate as well. Chief Phelan, are you comfortable with the rules? Do you think the rules ought to change there?
Yeah, I think it's important for an officer to live in their community. We only hire candidates that live in Grease. I think it makes you more invested in the community. I think it makes it personal to you. You know, I live in Grease. And, you know, if the gas station at the corner gets robbed, it's not just some gas station, it's the place where I get gas and milk, you know, so it's personal to me, you know, and it makes it more important, you know, and I think that's a big part of it. People that are invested in their community, I think, take better care of it. And I think the fact that we hire people that live in Grease plays a big role there. And we've talked about rule changes. Other municipalities have done it. The city of Buffalo just did it. They put it in their union contract where you have to live in Buffalo for at least 7 years after your date of hire. There are challenges. You know, I run into people at Wegmans almost every time I go, you know, and they want to talk to me about people speeding on their street. And, you know, it takes me an hour and a half to get a loaf
like
of bread.
You got nothing else to do.
but it's also, they get to see the chief at Wegmans.
Yeah, you know that's what the I mean? Job. No, I get you.
You know, so that's, you know, I'm not some guy that lives in Victor or something. You know, I live in your neighborhood, you know, and I think that tells people a lot about how you feel about your community.
Now, this is where you got to give us a little bit of secret dirt here. If someone says to you in Wegmans, there's people always speeding on my street, and you're just nodding up and down, are you thinking, I got to end this conversation as fast as possible, or are you actually making a mental note and we'll check it out?
I make a mental note. Yeah, I'll either send myself an email or and when I get back to work, I say, okay, we gotta get some special attention on this street because a resident stopped me and
all right,
they
well, then
asked
I
me
got,
for help.
Then I got one for you. No, you're actually serious. You're going to let, I'm kidding.
Yeah,
you're gonna,
no. Listen, I am a public servant.
You can't
my
really
job
turn
is,
it off.
My job is to serve the public. If you ask me for help because people are speeding on your street, that's important to me. I'm not, you know, I'm not kidding. That's important to me. And I'll do my very best to do the best I can to help you. Now, we got a lot of streets and a lot of roads in the town of Greece. It's 48 square miles. It's bigger geographically than the city of Rochester. But if you ask me for help, I'm gonna help you. That's my job.
Well, let me get some listener feedback here. Angela wants to know, says, congratulations to Tiffany. Do any of her friends that she grew up with, did they go into policing as well? Anybody else that you knew or grew up with? Angela's wondering.
I had a friend that I went to school with. We went to the same high school, Wilson. His name is Timothy Peterson. Hopefully he's not upset that I told his name over the air. But he thought about policing. I'm not sure if he's still pursuing it, but I did see him at one of the where you have to work out. I'm losing my train of thought here. The physical agility test. There
okay.
we go.
Yeah.
My best friend that I've known since ninth grade, she lives in Florida, but she's not in policing, but she's in the criminal justice field. She wants to do forensics. Her name is Carolyn Santiago. So even though I may not have friends that are necessarily trying to do police work, I do have some friends who are interested in the criminal justice field.
Okay. Do you get the sense, though, that growing up, when you decided you want to do it, there wasn't a whole lot of... And this conversation is similar to the talk about trying to recruit African-Americans or people of color to teach. We see mostly white teachers in school districts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we spent a year reporting on this subject in 2016, we would talk to African-American students in school districts, and they'd say, well, it's not even a conversation. We talk about our futures. It just doesn't really come up very much. Does policing come up much in those conversations?
Well, when I went to high school, I'm probably dating myself, this is about 8 years ago, we didn't really talk about policing that much, if we did at all. And again, the events that have happened recently didn't happen back then, so there wasn't a discussion for it, where it probably is a necessity to have that discussion now, I would say.
Okay. Barb writes to say, my recollection of growing up in Connecticut is that there were Boy Scouts organization troops whose focus was on policing or police science as opposed to sailing or camping. Is that something that happens here and that the Greece Police Organization might consider sponsoring?
Yeah, so we have an Explorer Post, which is part of Boy Scouts of America. We have the oldest Explorer Post in Monroe County. We have a very robust Explorer Post. I think we have about 40 members. And we've been participating in that program longer than anybody else around here. And we're at the point now where we've hired several of our explorers, and now they're police officers. So that's exciting, you know. So we have a really good program that way, and it's a good recruiting tool. But once again, we don't get a lot of minority interest in that program. So that's something we're working to change, but it's a good program.
Officer Gadsden, when you look ahead in your career, I suspect right now you'd like to just sort of pump the brakes and enjoy what you're doing now and, you know, work hard in your first days and weeks in the Greece Police Department. But could you see yourself moving up in the ranks in the future?
I would love to, because it's a big department. We have so many departments within the agency, you know, and I feel the more you get yourself involved in, you won't get stagnant and get complacent and have this, oh, it's another job, you know, another day on the job. You'll feel motivated. I understand right now I'm eager and happy about the job because I'm brand new, but I want to keep, you know, that energetic energy, and I just want to keep, you know, wanting to learn more and be diversified in the department to be a better asset. And so, yeah, I would like to move up the ranks, and only God knows how far I'll go, but we'll see.
Could you see her becoming the chief someday, Chief?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there any reason to think that couldn't happen?
No, absolutely not. I mean, if you listen to Tiffany talk for the last 50 minutes, you know she's probably more qualified than I am. but yeah, I don't. There's absolutely no reason why that couldn't happen, and I see Tiffany moving up the ranks, and I think that's part of the recruiting piece is that, you know, if you think that there's a problem in policing, join us and change it from the inside. You can not only be a police officer, you can be a sergeant, you can be a lieutenant, you can be the chief of police, you can run the police department. And then you can affect change if you think change needs to be affected. But if you just sit on the outside and say, you guys are bad and I'm, you know, that's it. You're part of the problem. You're not part of the solution. You know, join us. Change it from the inside. We welcome the change. We welcome the participation. Come with us and change it from the inside.
What has the reception been like for you in Greece?
I've been getting a lot of positive feedback. Again, being realistic, there may be some people that might not like it. But overall, the mass have congratulated me. I can just be in the store and somebody will say, hey, I've seen you on the news. Congratulations. And I've got that from people of color to people who are white, who congratulate me, want to shake my hand. And that makes me feel good because, again, working in a department where it's predominantly white, to see someone that is different from you to still congratulate you, that does make you feel more welcome. And I feel that's something that's needed so I can, you know, feel more comfortable. And I have been feeling comfortable so far. Even the platoon I work with, they're very helpful. And I love that, you know, because being new on a job, you're going to have 1,000 questions. I don't know everything. It's going to take a while before I'm that comfortable on the job. But to be part of a great team, I like that. You know, and a lot of people question that too. Well, I'll be honest, some people will ask me, well, you know, do they treat you fairly? You know, you're the only black female. Do they do things to, you know, try to be funny? And I say, no, so far the experience has been good. And I'm not the type to sugarcoat anything. If I wasn't having a good experience, I probably would be having to talk with my chief about it. So, you know, I'm a straight shooter. I can honestly say that it's been a great experience and I hope it continues to be.
So as in our final few minutes, give me sort of your view on what it's going to take for us to be sitting here in 5 years or in 10 years, and the tenor of the conversation about police-community relations in the country has changed. What needs to happen for us to sit here and you are not telling me that communities of color have a distrust or don't want to go into policing or don't feel comfortable or don't feel safe? What has to change?
As you were asking me that question, I was thinking in my head that some of the classes that they teach in the academy, more communication skills classes where you're, and even the, you know, the, I'll say professors, they're officers that teach, but even the instructors that you have in the class, if they're of different backgrounds, and even the role plays, more communication skills. Yes, you need the defensive tactics and you need to know firearms and, you know, all the things to keep you safe, but also encouraging courses where you talk to people, because that's a big portion of the job. People want to speak to someone that's relatable. I don't want someone talking to me and treat me lesser than because they have on a badge, and I despise that attitude. I will be honest, I hate that. And I said I would never be that way, because just like I want to be treated with respect, I'm going to treat the next person with respect. I'm not better than you because I'm a police officer. If I'm better than you, it's because of how I act, not because of who I am and what I have now. You know, and I always will have that humble mindset. I grew up in the inner city of Rochester in a single-parent household. So I understand people's perspective and outlook when they look at the police. And I think that's another reason why I always keep in the back of my head, you always treat people right.
What do you think people misunderstand about policing the most, officer?
The stereotypes. Oh, they just like to bully people. They probably, you know, got picked on in high school, so they chose a profession where, you know, now they can, you know, treat people any kind of way. But no, it's actually like a humanitarian profession. You're there, you're a public servant. The name speaks for itself. You're here to serve the public. And it can be mentally taxing at times. It can be hard. It's a tough job. Because think about it. When people call 911, it's not because they're having a good day. They're dealing with a situation where it's above them now and they need you to control it. So a lot of times you are seeing people at their worst, you know, and trying to defuse a situation. But, you know, It can be a lot. It's a lot that goes into policing and responding to a call where a person will feel like, you know, well, you just talk to me kind of way. No, I'm trying to defuse the situation. I'm trying to grab your attention. I'm trying to separate the party so I can talk to you. And sometimes the tactics that we use, they may find it offensive, but we're actually trying to help.
Well, it has been an honor to talk to you and to the chief. And I say that not to genuflect to police, but to say that I do respect the difficult job of policing, and I think it is vital that, as the chief says, you are hiring people with the mindset of making sure that everyone is treated fairly, that people are not treated differently based on who they are, what community they are in, what race they are. You've got hard work to do. Chief, I know you and the department have hard work to do, And this hire makes history. And I can see why the chief is really excited about this hire. So it has been an honor to talk to you, and good luck to you, and I hope we can talk some more in the future.
Thank you.
Officer Tiffany Gatson, the first African-American woman hired in the Greece Police Department, just starting out in her career there, and a Rochester native now living in Greece. The chief of police, you'll find him in Wegmans or elsewhere, is Patrick Phelan. And Chief Phelan, I will also say that when there are difficult conversations, there are a number of people in our community who are basically saying yes every time we call. And you're among them, and that means a lot to us. And we appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again.
Yeah, the only way we get through this stuff is we're willing to talk about it, and I'm willing to talk anytime.
Chief Patrick Phelan from the Greece Police Department. More connections coming up.